us, please? Beth, would you? Thank you. If you would look in your order of service, there's a responsive reading in there for the chalice lighting. And as you were finding that, I will just remind you that when we light our flaming chalice, the symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, it is a reminder of the spark of the holy and the divine that is in each of us. And now if you will join me in reading. Community is the spirit, the guiding light of the tribe, whereby people come together in order to fulfill a specific purpose and to take care of one another. Thank you, and please be seated. I am delighted to introduce my co-worship leader this morning. I have known her since my birth, my sister Julie Hutzler. Would you please join me up here?
Thank you. Oh, it works.
It does work. Julie is not unfamiliar with leading groups and also looking at the spiritual perspective of things. She is a teacher, a healing arts practitioner, an artist, and most recently she is working as a healthy communications facilitator for businesses. This is my sister, Julie.
Thank you.
You get applause. We decided that we would explore the gifts and challenges of committed relationships and how those gifts and challenges help us to open our hearts, not only to each other, but that practice of opening our hearts to the stranger, to those who are different than us, and how relationships shape us and challenge us, bless and comfort us, transform us, and help us to be our best selves. We're going to be using our relationship as sisters and as friends as examples, and we'll be telling our stories, and we hope that you will be able to look at your own relationships and see how these ideas work in your life.
So, you're probably very familiar with how your family of origin begins to shape how you see the world. And Jan and I came from a pretty large family in the Midwest, five children, and we struggled pretty hard to carve our own little unique place in that big family. And the hierarchy went like this, right? Brother, boy, good, right? Girl, okay. That would be me. Next. Jan, middle, what? Two more girls, right? So the relationship that Jan and I worked through was I carved a path for myself because I didn't really want to follow in my brother's. So I was carving the path, and she was, you know, 2 years behind me. She could have easily followed in my path. But, for example, let's see. I was the oldest girl.
I was the second oldest.
I was the one who was given all the responsibility, right? You as women remember that.
It was very easy for me to defer to her in all things.
I studied the piano.
So I took up the banjo.
Like, who would do that, right?
And you can relate.
Okay. I studied French and German.
So I took Spanish.
Spanish. Latin was your only other choice, right? And then I drew and painted.
So I took up photography.
And that kind of gives you an idea of how our relationship began. And it wasn't so much that we did this, although we did a little of that.
We did.
I was really neat.
Not so neat.
I tied up her socks and threw them in the laundry. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Anyway, basically, I guess what I wanted to say is that this will give you sort of an idea of where we've come from. So it wasn't easy for us from the very beginning. But for whatever reason, our relationship became very important to us. And so some of the things that we had to overcome is kind of what we're going to be talking about today.
Okay. All right. We'll tell you more stories in a moment.
Well, in our many years together, we have had a lot of interesting experiences, but putting this little program together, by the way, was really, really transformative, I think, for both of us, because we were we were asked to look at all the major places in our life where, in our relationship, where things sort of took a turn for the better.
Or the worse.
Or the worse. She said. Anyway, we came to this, there was this one critical spot. We had really been working on our relationship and consciously really trying to make it equal instead of older sister, younger sister. And but it's always challenging, if you guys are familiar with that, going home to the family of origin and 44 Wildwood Road. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. I can see nodding heads. And even though we struggle so hard to be our unique selves and really shine, when we go back home, somehow we just go, dun, dun, you know, the little Partridge Family again. So anyway, it was one of those times we had gone back to Indiana to visit our folks, and there was a lot of people there and stuff. And some things transpired over that weekend or whatever that I was really disappointed in Jan. Some of the things, I didn't feel like she had my back. I didn't feel like she, I didn't feel like it reflected the more mature relationship we had. And so I didn't want to let it go. So I figured I should write her a letter. So when I got home, I wrote her a whole letter and just poured my heart out and said, this is not okay. And I waited for an answer. And I figured that would determine where we were going to go from there, right? So she sent me an email and said, please let me think about my answer. And I thought, well, okay. I wanted to just say, oh, I'm sorry, I wanted to be there for you. And so I waited and I waited and I waited a month. And this is the answer that I got. That changed my life.
I wrote this as a way of responding to her concerns about our relationship. I wrote her this poem, and it's called The Gift. I placed it in my carrying basket and slung it over my handlebars and pedaled purposely down the dirt track. I slowed my bike to admire the yellow and red markings that painted the turtle that soaked up the sun at the base of those lacy white flowers made from a queen. I detoured into the meadow to lay on the grasses, the stems tickling my bare legs. Looked up through sky blue chicory and goldenrod and the black eyes of Susan. Angel wings flew across the sky in wisps of delight. A delicate web caught my attention and I marveled at the loveliness of the spider's pantry. Oh, yes, I have something to deliver. Back on my old blue bike with the wire basket and the leaky tire, moving solidly along the track, through the big pothole, mud-splattered legs soar up the steep hill, gliding freely down the other side. The German shepherd saw me before I came out of my daydream and chased and barked and showed his yellow teeth. I pushed hard and lifted myself off the seat to get more power to my legs, to fly away, my heart in a frenzy to match the receding sound of the barking dog. I continued on. I arrive, tired, muddy, wet now from the rain that has begun to fall gently from an unconcerned sky. I drop my bike by the path that leads to the door of a cozy cottage. With yellow light from the windows illuminating the near dark garden, I pause and reach into my basket and grasp what I have brought. And by the filtered light of the house, I examine it. It is a stone, and on one side it is smooth, and my fingers naturally glide over the face, reveling in its flawless, perfect beauty. The blue, purple, pink colors are sparkling in the light, and I believe for a moment I can see the whole universe in its face. The other side of the rock is rough, unpolished, raw. The earthy shades of brown and tan intertwine and root the purple and blue to earth. And connecting the two spheres of the stone is a perfect spiral, laid down millions of years ago by some long-forgotten snail-like creature. I found this treasure in the stream where I wander to try to make sense of things, of growing and changing, of choices and of God. And I picked it up all ancient and lonely and beautiful, and I added my tears to its long history. Then I knock on your You open it, a soft smile of anticipation and friendship on your face. I smile back, take your hand, and gently, carefully place the stone in your palm. Curl your fingers over it, squeeze lightly, and go back to my blue bike, the dirt track, the night sky.
I had made a note to bring a tissue because some of these stories that recount our many years together are pretty emotional still. And, of course, that song was really beautiful, and that got me going. Jan said it was okay, though. So it was 1996, and it was May, and our entire family was gathered in southern Indiana for a big old shindig. That is not going to help if you cry. And we were waiting on Jan. We were all there, and then we got a call that changed my life forever. Sorry. And that call was that Jan had ovarian cancer. And, oh, thank you so much. I'm going to take a couple. You know, we practiced this a few times, and I cried every time, and I'm like, okay, I should have got that out of my system, right? But we were both in our mid-30s, and that was just not an option for Jan to leave this planet. I was her older sister, and I was not going to live in this life without her. I was older. She should live longer than me. And from that moment on, I suddenly realized that Jan was so important in my life that I wasn't going to let her die. And I mean, neither was Maggie. And our mother was not having anything to do with it. She's just like, it is not going to happen. And so I made a conscious decision on that day to not only be a part of part of her life more, but also to be an active part of helping her heal. And in that action, and I lived on the West Coast, and she lived on the East Coast, and I changed my phone plan, and I visited more often. But basically, I changed everything in my life, and so did my husband. My husband and I both did a lot of research about what brought cancer on, what were the beliefs that we held, what were the things that we ate, what are the things we put on our bodies. We looked at everything. It completely transformed our physical life, our spiritual life, our emotional life. And also my value of Jan greatly increased. When you're in your 30s, you're just like, you know, climbing the ladder to like success and all that. And the last thing you're thinking about is, you know, maybe the details of your family. So we also, Jan and I did a lot of meditation together. Her oncologist would tell her what he needed that platelet count to be in her body. And I was in San Francisco, and she was in New York, and it didn't matter. Every day, we would consciously meditate on what that platelet count needed to be. And you cannot imagine how many times that was the exact number the exact number. And the doctor would just go, wow, that is what I needed it to be. That's right. And so that was the other thing that it did for me, was it really gave me the courage to delve more deeply into my own healing work and my own energy healing work. Because of practicing it so much of the time on Jan, or with Jan. She was my guinea pig. When I went to my gynecologist, she had told me that because Jan and I were always very connected, that her doctor said that all the sisters really needed to be checked out. My gynecologist said, your sister has a 5% chance of being alive in 5 years. And that's a statistic that Jan just found out yesterday when we were practicing this, because I never told her, because I don't believe in that crap. Obviously, it's been 21 years, and I value and relish every day that we've had with each other. And so basically, as far as transforming that relationship, transformed my life in so many ways that I will never... You know, we took basically a tragedy, and it became a pretty powerful transformation. Thank you, Jan. Taking my tissues with me.
going to take a second here. Please join me in a spirit of prayer and meditation. Great Spirit of love, we come to you this morning with so many prayers in our hearts, prayers of gratitude and transformation, prayers of sadness and grief and confusion. We support each other here in this community, no matter where we are and what we're going through. We thank you for this beautiful summery day and the kind of official beginning of summer. Days that we can look forward to with long sunshine, puffy clouds, leisure. We also pray for the other part of this holiday, Memorial Day, and we pray for all of those men and women who have lost their lives for their countries in war. We also pray for an end to war. We pray for peace. We pray for light on all of us in this scared and crazy and beautiful world. There are people in our First Parish community who have asked for prayers. So we pray for Ursula Christofi, who will be coming home from Mount Auburn Hospital tomorrow. We pray for her, and we pray love surround her. We pray for her husband, Yvonne, who has moved to Concord Park. We pray for his settling in and being surrounded by his friends and family. We pray for Dorothy Kramer's mother-in-law, the grandmother of Luca and Sophia, who is being cared for by hospice on Cape Cod. And we pray for John and Ginger Lang. John is at home now, recuperating, and we pray strength and love to support them. And we pray for my daughter, Maggie, and her fiancé, Jonathan, as they prepare to marry on Saturday. Thank you so much for all of the prayers that are in our hearts and in our minds. May they be offered up at this time. I will offer a moment of silence that we can sink into, and let us say our prayers silently and within our own hearts, but offering them up. Let us sink into this silence. So may it be. These words are from theologian Henry Nouwen. To give someone a blessing is the most significant affirmation we can offer. It is more than a word of praise or appreciation. It is more than pointing out someone's talents and good deeds. It is more than putting someone in the light. To give a blessing is to affirm, to say yes to a person's belovedness. Blessings say yes to a person's belovedness. I'm sure we can all come up with many ways that relationships have blessed us in our lives. And I have a story, a short story that's an example from my relationship with Julie, and it's related to the story she told about the cancer experience. She mentioned that she was working and living in Sausalito, California. She was a professional. She had a very high-level manager job. She looked very professional. She dressed professionally. And during that summer that I was going through chemo and I had lost all my hair, she came to visit me. She took some time off of her work, and I went to pick her up at the airport and was surprised to see when she stepped down the ramp that she had shaved her head, and there was her bald head shining in the fluorescent airport lighting to match my own. And it was such an emotional experience for me. And the act of her cutting off all of her hair and looking like a cancer patient and enduring the looks of pity and the stares that I also endured was a great gift to me. And because I was going through it, on some level, she took what she could to go through it as well. And that gift was a blessing, and it was also a significant affirmation. I have more to say, but I wrote it down and I can't find the paper. A blessing that is in that way, her blessing was so selfless and so obvious, and she had to walk around her business day to day with no hair. And that blessing invoked divine protection and aid in me. It was a prayer for my own healing. It was a pronouncement of her commitment to stand alongside me. And receiving that blessing somehow allowed me to acknowledge my own worth, my own worthiness. I took comfort in being loved, supported, and cherished. And to be comforted is to be reminded of our own strength. To be comforted is to be reminded that we have the strength inside of us. I invite you to bring into your heart a person or persons who you have a committed relationship with. See them in your mind's eye. It is through the practice daily and over the years of saying yes to another person's belovedness that opens our hearts. This practice of showing up and listening and taking great care with our own words and speaking our own truth, of taking the many opportunities to see a different perspective, another way, an alternative to our own ideas, to consider other options and find new solutions. It is through this that we become more accepting and more capable of really seeing the other and appreciating our differences and becoming loving communicators. And that work of accepting and appreciating and communicating, that work helps us gain skill in forgiveness of ourselves and others. And we learn to let go of the small irritations and see the bigger picture, and to laugh at ourselves and the craziness of life, and we gain humility. And we learn the value of being vulnerable with others, and we learn how to be strong with and for another. These day-to-day opportunities, these consistent experiences of living in relation with others, this is where we learn to be our best selves. Our greatest teachers are our spouses, our children, our parents, our friends, sisters, brothers. These teachers can be triple PhDs, giving us graduate level work, pushing us in ways that stretch our every muscle. And they can also be kindergarten teachers who remind us to be kind and share our snacks and play well with others and kiss the owies. It is these teachers, these loved ones, whose belovedness we see, who soften and break and open our hearts to the stranger, to the other, to those we don't know or don't understand, who help us to see the beauty and the belovedness in all of us.